Do you get frustrated with porn filters that block too much or too little? Let me introduce you to Plucky, a new filter that you customize. Here's how it works. You set your own boundaries, deciding which websites are and aren't safe for you. If you're thinking, I'm not sure I can trust myself all the time, Plucky is made for you. It enforces the boundaries that you set, and it enforces them with steel, so you can't self-sabotage when tempted. Plucky puts your best self in control. People in over 100 countries use Plucky. Pricing is on a sliding scale, so it's affordable for everyone. For a free 30-day trial with no sign-up required, go to pluckyfilter.com. Take courage, take control, get Plucky. Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. We're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, I welcome Sam Joelman. He's a therapist, author, and father to discuss his book, The Sex Talk You Never Got, Reclaiming the Heart of Masculine Sexuality. Sam shares his journey into counseling, emphasizing the importance of meaningful conversations about sexuality. Then we explore the impact of shame and purity culture and the distinction between normal arousal and lust. Sam highlights the need for competent counseling and open dialogue to foster a healthier understanding of men's sexual formation. This episode is a heartfelt call to reclaim the beauty and complexity of human sexuality as God designed it. To learn more about Sam and the book, visit samjoelman.com. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in the show notes for today. And as always, friends, we would sure love it if you would rate and review the podcast to help others find it. Now let's go ahead and dive into today's insightful conversation with Sam. All right. Well, Sam Joelman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad that our paths crossed and I got to learn a little bit about you and this pretty cool book that you've got out. By the time this airs, this book that you have written will already be out. I know when we're doing this recording, it's kind of still in pre-release stage.
That's right.
But you've written this book called The Sex Talk You Never Got.
Yes.
And we're going to get to that information, that content. But first, could you just maybe introduce yourself a little bit to our audience and tell us maybe a little bit of your own backstory and how you got into some of the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, I'm a therapist, obviously an author. I'm a father of three sons. And as I say, a lover, a married man. My wife and I have been married for 21 years. And I, you know, I come by this work first on the receiving end. When I was 19, is when I discovered internet pornography, and in many ways am thankful to God that I got caught by early in that journey by my mother, which was very shameful experience and awkward and tense. To have my mother, you know, ask one day, what are all these internet, you know, pages, websites? She was still figuring out the computer that we'd gotten. And I confessed to her that it was me. And in many ways, there was this terror, but relief, right? And that this growing darkness, this world that felt dark, but, you know, alluring, that I'd been discovered. And I left that moment, went to my room, and literally just felt my heart racing. Like, what happens next, right? In this discovery. And thank God my mom came, and which still felt very awkward. Like, I don't know how to talk about this. But it led to her inviting me, saying, you know, do you want to go talk to a counselor about this? And that was such a gift more than I even knew at the time. And so I sat with a counselor for the first time at 19 and was expecting that to go, you know, basically with some kind of, you know, condemnation or hard, you know, getting in my face conversation about how bad what I was doing was and how I needed to change. And this man ended up being a very kind man to me. And our conversation went to places in my own story, right? It became a bigger conversation about me and my heart. I remember finding myself in tears at the end of that first session, wondering, like, what did you just do? Like, what are we talking about? It was, so it opened up this whole world of understanding, you know, sexual struggle is far bigger than simple behavior. There's a whole story to it. And I was with that counselor for a couple of years, and just felt like what he did was magic. And there was a prayer somewhere in there of like, God, I would, if I could do this for a living, that'd be amazing. So, you know, 25 years later, here I am, doing that work, and I love it. I want to do it till I'm 95. But walking with people, and into their stories of, you know, all problems and issues, but particularly the sexually broken, oppressed, stuck, just have a special place in my heart.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference to have somebody that is, competent to be able to help, us navigate those difficult parts of our being that we just can't understand when those types of issues like pornography and other things lure us away from the good design that God made for us in that.
Yes.
And now in the same way, and we can talk about this just a little bit before we get to the book is, can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like with that counselor that was so positive and how sometimes counselors that are not competent in their craft can actually be harmful to a person's, you know, recovery.
Yeah. You know, I think, and you know, I can't speak for what he was holding in his own head or heart at the time, but I can speak to what was a gift to me is that he made it about more than a simple behavior or behavior modification, right? Like we need to figure out a way to get you to stop the behavior. And treat this as like lust and, you know, we need to get you to stop sinning and, you know, and again, I'm not saying that treating the behavior in itself is bad, but if you only treat behavior, I think that's where you get into a bind where honestly you often just double people's shame because they don't know why they can't quit, even though their heart is very sincerely wanting to stop, right? And they've prayed, and probably by the time they've come to a counselor, they've suffered so much agony. And in my sense, that's been true. And why can't I just quit? It seems so easy. Just stop, right? there's a reason, you know, Saturday Night Live made a skit about a counselor just telling you to stop. Right. It's because it doesn't work. You have to go deeper than just behavior because behavior is always symbolic. It's always a mirror because we're more than just animals, right? Who do behavior. Behavior is always meaningful. So I think the gift that counselor gave me is to understand I was a person with a story. And that story had a certain momentum to it, right? I was on a path going somewhere and I didn't necessarily know that story, but there were things that had been set in play in my life that were contributing to that moment as well as sin, no doubt about it, but just more than that. So I think his curiosity, also understanding, you know, I think sexual sin often, you know, leads us to a kind of self-hatred that can be just as binding as any kind of lust, Right. And I think a counselor that doesn't address shame, self-hatred, and doesn't go beyond behavior, really, you know, leaves people stuck and maybe even more, in the hell of their own shame.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things we deal with all the time in our ministry and helping men to be able to break free from unwanted sexual behaviors is so much of it then boils down to identity and dealing with those shame lies against one's true identity. And what does it mean to actually be made in the image of God and all those amazing things that are true, but can get so buried in all of the other brokenness and shame that can come through various ways that we can act out or be acted out upon.
Yes.
So I want to ask you now, why did you write this book? So you've written this book that is called The Sex Talk You Never Got: Reclaiming the Heart of Masculine Sexuality.
Yeah. You know, again, as a counselor, you know, oftentimes men come in to counseling when something's broken or on fire, right? Some crisis has happened, like a relationship crisis in their marriage, or they've gotten caught, or they're suffering, you know, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, something's on fire, right? And they need help. And rightfully so, they come in during that time. But it's inviting them. There's always a story, as I've said, you know, to things. And I wrote the book seeing that a lot of times there's so much in men's sexual story, their story of sexual formation, that just never gets addressed in any other place. And, you know, if you think about it, I think men are, as I say in the book, men are over-sexualized. You know, we're often sold a lot of things through sex appeal. But we're very under sexually nurtured, meaning like sexuality is probably the place where men have had the least meaningful conversations in their life. You know, most of the men I talk with have never had a sex talk, or if they did, it was something awkward, quick, you know, a basic kind of anatomy lesson. Often shoddy anatomy lesson, you know, and then a purity lecture, maybe, like don't screw it up, basically, right? And that's it. And it just leaves so much unaddressed, in a man's sexual formation.
Yeah, and usually that kind of talk usually has its own level of fear and shame at its base, because you talk about the awkwardness of a dad or even a mom trying to share these things, and they're, you know, sweating, and they're just, so it comes across as like something is severely wrong,
right,
with this topic. Right.
Right.
So it's like, then that shame gets passed along,
right,
that fear, that, you know, whatever gets passed along from the parent who's feeling their own shame and fear around the topic. And so it almost becomes just like this generational thing,
right,
where fear and shame become the mode of dealing with sex.
Yes, that's so well said. Exactly. In other words, you know, we're inheriting our parents' sexual story through how they bring their own body or their own nervousness to that conversation, or not even having the conversation, right? It's often not a lack of knowledge per se. It's often just their own shame. You're right. So it scripts, you've said that well, it really scripts sex as a shameful thing, not an exciting thing. Like, how cool that God made us this way, and look what's coming, you know? It doesn't invite that kind of excitement or anticipation or blessing.
So let's talk about one of the things that you said that sometimes comes through these maybe awkward and stilted sort of sex talk conversations that maybe some of our audience got, but I would venture to guess that many of them didn't. Many men that come to our ministry, they're like, dad talk about sex? Are you kidding? I mean, it was like, if it ever was talked about, it was in lewd terms, or it was around a joke, or it was like introducing pornography. It was all brokenness. It was never something, like you said, beautiful and good and all that. But let's talk. You mentioned about how sometimes in those conversations, it can become maybe like a purity lecture. So let's talk about that for just a second. How can that be damaging or confusing if everything that a young boy learns about sex is around just this one outcome, which is purity? How is that maybe not a good approach for teaching on sexuality to our children?
Yeah, you know, and again, purity is obviously something God calls us to. So it's not that purity in itself is bad. It's just, if that's the only goal of sexuality is to maintain purity, it leaves something out, I think, in terms of, again, anticipation, excitement, how God made us as sensual beings and, you know, to be wowed by life. As I talk about in the book, you know, we're really made for awe, and awe, I think, should be the goal of sexuality. Because awe leads to worship. But, you know, I think if the script is purity only, it, again, the implication, as you said well, is it starts to set up this idea that you need to be scared of your sexuality, right? Like, it, you know, you're probably a hair's breadth away from acting out. And I think it overscripts this idea of, you know, you're kind of a monster in waiting, or, mm-hmm. you know, and you better be really scared of what happens in your sexuality. I think it also creates this body confusion around the difference between arousal and lust. You know, oftentimes, you know, you think of being in, like, let's say Starbucks or the grocery store, right? And you see a beautiful person, a beautiful woman, and something moves in you, right? I think it's easy to confuse that instantly with, oh, that's lust, and I need to shut it down, right? And it this opposition to the body without pausing to say, well, hold on. You know, it's not instantly true that what's moving in you is lust. It may be just an appreciation for beauty or the goodness of a person.
One of the things we talk about in our ministry a lot is learning how to respond to the, what we call the wow response.
Oh, that's so well said.
So we conflate the wow response with a poor response to the wow response.
Yes.
So it's like, I can take the wow response, which is exactly what you're talking about. We're biologically wired to be, like you said, awe. There's a sense of, oh, wow, there's a beautiful person and something did move in me. How you respond to that is usually what's going to determine, is something else coming up in me that is moving me toward an appreciation of God and his image bearers and all that, or something is moving me more inward and saying, I'm going to now steal this image and I'm going to use it in a way that is inappropriate in my mind or whatever else.
Yes, that's so well said. I love that. Yes. Like, I had a friend say recently, you know, in watching the WNBA during March Madness, and Caitlin Clark, you know, the 3-point shooter for Iowa, a shooter in general, but she's very good at 3-pointers. But he was describing to me, he said, you know, I'm drawn to her, and I love watching her in the play of basketball. And there was this question he was kind of asking, is like, is that lust? He's like, it doesn't feel sexual. It doesn't, I'm not fantasizing. I'm just, and I said, I think that's awe. Like, I think she's just really good. And she's in the finesse of a good athlete at play, right? Like we love watching the Olympics. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah. And yet there is a difference. You know, I was just talking with some guys in a group that I run each week at my church, and we were talking about this idea of, just overall, God has made us with all these senses, sight, sound, hearing, all, to be able to enjoy the creation that he's made. But we also all, every single man in there had to say, yeah, but I don't respond the same way to a sunset as I do to a beautiful woman.
Uh-huh.
So there is something uniquely designed in our sexuality that creates a deeper response than anything for men, especially. And when we're talking yes. about especially visual stimulation.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Because one of the things that you do mention in the book is this idea of sexual formation, because you're talking about kind of this process. And
yeah.
Can you talk about, and a minute ago you talked about, can we distinguish the difference between just the normal arousal response that God has given us and lust? Why is there such a different response that God has wired into us as men when it comes to sexual stimulation versus any other kind of sensory experience that we could have in life?
Yeah. And again, you know, some of that I'll leave up to God and his mystery of why is this so magnetic, right? Why is sexuality so, you know, above all stimulating, arousing, alluring in itself? You know, some of that's in the mystery itself. But, you know, the best I can say is, you know, you know, a sunset is a form of beauty which is deeply moving. Or, you know, a lion at the zoo, and you know, the awe we could feel at the strength and power of a lion. But you think of sex as, you know, there's the promise or the possibility of union, mm-hmm. right? And of sensuality, not just visually, but like all senses and touch. And so I think sex brings together both this sense of awe, but our desire for union and physical connection, right? Physical passion. Because sex isn't just a spectator sport, right? It's not intended to be something you watch. It's meant to be something you participate in. So I don't participate in a sunset.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a relational connection to that, right? Or the possibility of a relational connection to that, you know, to the sun,
right?
To those colors, right?
Right, right. And you think even like watching Caitlin Clark, like I'm just a spectator. Again, if I was on the floor playing, right, that would step up the experience of awe. But sex is like, now take that times 1,000, right? Like naked, passionate, body, touch, it's play, beauty, vulnerability, intimacy. I mean, it is the bringing together of all of those things. I think I would also add, you know, there's a researcher, Dacher Keltner, who's done research on awe. And he says that the thing that most moves people to awe was his question. What moves people to awe the most? He thought it would be a sunset, right? Some visual nature experience. It turns out it's people that we most feel awe in response to people. So, you know, just to add, there's something, you know, as I say in the book, like Psalm 8, where David, you know, is waxing eloquent about humans, about himself, really. And he says, you know, what are we that you're mindful of us? And, you know, the Son of Man that you care for us. And the next line is, you made us a little lower than God. And again, it's often translated heavenly beings, meaning we think angels. But another translation there could be, you made us a little lower than God. So I think just the sense of like, people are the most staggeringly beautiful expression of God's glory on the earth. So again, that's my attempt at answering the mystery of why sex is so magnetizing.
Yeah. And there's a reason why God designed it the way he did, because it does give us that metaphor, that picture of the gospel of intimacy with our creator.
Yes.
Right. So let's talk for a little bit about why is it that sexuality seems to be so, especially for boys growing up, but I think in general now for all kids growing up, Why does it seem to be so neglected and so little talked about as part of just the development of a child from childhood to adulthood?
That's a great question. And to some extent, I would want to say, gosh, I am baffled by that as well. So, but let me start with, you know, I think as you've said so well earlier, you know, you can talk about, let's say, there are some topics you can talk about and really not be in your body all that much. You could talk about, I don't know, geology, the rock strata of the Rocky Mountains, you know, and I don't know. Maybe some people it would really get them going, but it's going to be a fairly boring.
You talk about Pythagorean's theorem or something like that,
right?
A math equation,
right?
I'm not going to be in my body that much talking about that,
right? Exactly. Or taxes, you know, unless it's stress and fear. But like, sex is one of those things that you can't talk about outside of your body. Again, that's my opinion, but it's so embodied instantly in terms of a conversation. So I think, as you said earlier, you know, if you just generations of parents who have their own sense of shame, I know my parents' story now, of which I didn't know at 12 and 13 when my mom handed me a book and said, you know, here's a book on sex. If you have any questions, go ask your brother, because I'm not a guy. And that was it. That was the 30-second sex talk I got, which was nothing about sex. You know, I now know their story of shame that they bring, you know, cultural communal shame that they bring to having conceived out of wedlock. And the way their community condescended to them. And, you know, I grieve for my parents that they bear that. So, you know, you just think that's me in one story of like, it's, you can't talk about this outside of your own story or your own body. So if you haven't addressed your own shame or your own story, you're going to be pulled to act out of that.
So let's talk about that a little bit. There's two things I want to talk about here. One is, for everybody who's listening, they did not get that good, healthy, godly, connected training from their parents of being able to really understand. They didn't get that good, healthy sexual formation in their family of origin. And they're experiencing all the ramifications of that brokenness in their life now. How can those who are in that kind of situation, how can their sexual story be restoried, or how can there be a new narrative that they engage now moving forward?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, those are the very people I wrote this book for, is, you know, after the fact, now what, right? You're a couple decades older, or a decade older, or a few years older than. You know, 18, and the time has come and gone for you to get a sex talk, or at least a good one. You know, there really is this sense of beginning to engage your sexuality with a greater kindness and curiosity. It's easy, again, as I said, and I would also add, what keeps this so suppressed as a topic in families, you know, evil hates your sexuality. It wants you to bury it. It wants you to keep it in silence and secrets and shame. So, you know, to start with, to just understand, evil wants to join your sexuality to shame. It is working and has been over your life to do that. But then how do you address that? To start to be curious about your shame, to actually start to wonder, you know, a lot of times people, at least the men that I walk with, they just assume their shame is because of their sin. Mm. It's me. I'm just a mess. I'm screwed up. You know, I just it's mine. It's just conviction or guilt, right? It, mm-hmm. So to begin to turn the table on that and say, wait a second, what is the story of this shame? To be curious, you know, most guys don't come in to counseling saying, I have a story of sexual harm. That stuff is so buried. A lot of times guys will even say to me, you know, I plan to take this to my grave.
Mm-hmm.
I never wanted to talk about this. Or maybe even a little less mild, they'll say, well, there's some weird stuff that happened when I was a kid. Or there's something I just don't know how to talk about. That stuff, you know, to begin to be curious about that and find a way to start to talk about it. I'm convinced innocence is recoverable, that Jesus can restore your childlike sense of awe, mm-hmm. your childlike heart, and beginning to really in a way get angry at the messages of shame that have haunted you and say, you know, if God made me good originally in the garden, and obviously we've all fallen, but, you know, the original design of Adam's sexuality was good, then why do I feel so assaulted as if I'm a monster or a pervert or twisted or dark, right? That you stop just accepting, well, I'm just messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you stop engaging with that hopeless narrative. So now I want to ask you now, because you said you're a dad of three boys.
Yes.
So now let's speak to the other side of the equation. So you just spoke a minute to those who, hey, they've grown up and they did not get that conversation or that input for healthy spiritual or sexual formation. But now, okay, you're a dad of three boys. I'd love to hear, let's talk to the parents for a minute, especially the dads out there, because this book is about reclaiming healthy masculine sexuality, right?
Yes.
Or reclaiming the heart of masculine sexuality. So what would you say to the dads out there that are going, oh my goodness, I've got kids at home. I've got youngsters. You know what?
Yeah.
What do I do? How do I change maybe the generational pattern in my home of this fear and shame narrative being passed on to my kids? So what would you say to the dads out there?
Well, again, the first thing is going to have nothing to do with what you say. And it's going to have everything to do with what we're talking about, which is address your own story of shame. Because again, understanding what's going to keep you from the conversation probably most is your own embodied sexuality. So being curious about the events of your story, mm-hmm. right? Just literally sitting down and you could bullet point, what are the 10 most impactful events or the 10 things that shaped your sexuality? Or 20, you know, don't stop at 10. Just if you just did a bullet point of here are the events that shape me. Have you ever talked about those events? Have you ever addressed their impact on you or been curious about them? That's going to be huge. Think about your own story. Because you're bringing your body, not just information. You're bringing your own heart. But then beyond that, you know, the relief here is I think it's meant to be not just one sex talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be, and this doesn't originate with me, but, you know, 100 1-minute sex talks over a kid's life. Meaning like you don't have to do a 2-hour lecture on sexuality and get it all in, right? In fact, that's, you know, it's probably not going to go well because of how awkward that all right, will yeah. feel for your kid to have that much thrown at them. So, you know, I really think, you know, not that it's talk at first, but the sex talk really begins at birth with how you invite your children to treat their own bodies. So I say early childhood, it's all about blessing embodiment,
mm-hmm.
Sensuality, meaning like how they enjoy and receive the world, blessing their bodies, blessing their curiosity about their own bodies. So, you know, using the right names for body parts, just inviting them to see their body as like the creation and artwork of God. And then answering their curiosity, meaning beginning to try to predict where their questions are going. And, you know, my sons are 12, 10, and 7. So really, you know, trying to be aware of and answering their questions, but answering their questions in like a 1 minute way. Don't give them the hour lecture again. But just enough to keep their curiosity kind of slaked, you know, in other words, that they begin to know any question is an okay question. And they can bring it to you. There's no shame.
Yeah. It's like when a 7-year-old asks you, where do babies come from? You don't have to give them a whole sexual education lesson, right? I mean, there's a way that you can answer that question to a 7-year-old that by the time they're 15, they're going to have a whole completely different understanding of it. Because like you said, you have those 101-minute conversations all over, you know, kind of spread out.
Right.
Sam, this has been a great conversation. And I'd love for you to tell our audience where they can go to learn more about you, get a copy of the book, learn more about your counseling. Where can people go to get more information?
Yes, thank you. You know, you can go to my website, samjolman.com. You can get the book wherever you enjoy getting your books. You know, I always vote for supporting your local bookshops, but anywhere it's available. And you can get bonuses for purchase at my website even after the launch date. And I also write on Substack at samjolman.substack.com on healthy sexuality, and would love to have you meet me there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we will make sure to put all of that in the show notes, Sam. But man, thank you so much for writing this book, but also thank you for being with us today and sharing your time.
Jonathan, this has been a great conversation. I love the work you guys are doing too.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we are going to put all that information that Sam just shared into the show notes, plus even some more to help you navigate and heal from whatever shame lies you've been struggling with in your own sexuality. But also, hopefully, for those of you out there that are parents, this will help you to change the generational trajectory of your family and be able to really pass good things on to your kids to help them in their sexual formation from this godly, healthy standpoint. But we are always glad that you've been with us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.